This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. Tonight, escaping the danger. Thousands flee from bushfire-affected towns ahead of the weekend's spike in dangerous conditions. There's a rush to get the message out and a strong warning to prioritise life over property.
The dynamics of these fires are just something that are beyond people's imagination. So life is so much more important, obviously, than property. And so I would really urge people to take the first option of just getting out of the way.
And as the bushfire crisis continues, the Prime Minister defends the federal government's response so far. That's coming up on PM. First to New South Wales, where the state government has declared a 7-day state of emergency from tomorrow, ahead of what are predicted to be very dangerous bushfire conditions on the state's south coast this weekend. The Premier Gladys Berejiklian made the announcement this afternoon.
The reason why we're doing it tomorrow, ahead of Saturday, is to make sure that Commissioner Fitzsimmons and all of the emergency personnel, all of our agencies, all organisations know that from tomorrow they will be subject to forced evacuations, road closures, road openings and anything else we need to do as a state to keep our residents safe and to keep property safe. We don't take these decisions lightly, but we also want to make sure we're taking every single precaution to be prepared for what could be a horrible day on Saturday. We know that temperatures will be in the mid-40s in parts of the state. We also know that there are more fires burning today than we would like to have seen in the milder conditions, which could suddenly flare up and do very unpredictable things on Saturday.
The New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian. Thousands of residents and tourists have been trying to leave the area today after the state's Rural Fire Service declared what they're calling a tourist leave zone. At the same time, efforts to evacuate major population centres such as Batemans Bay and Ulla Dulla have been hampered by new road closures. Our reporter Gavin Coote is in Batemans Bay.
We're going to see the likely repeat of the kind of ferocious fire conditions that flared up on New Year's Eve. But it could be even worse, the Rural Fire Service is predicting. So this state of emergency will basically mean authorities can forcibly evacuate people from areas they feel that they have no business being in. Their lives could be at risk. And utilities can also take control of essential infrastructure. And this is essentially to ensure that anyone that doesn't need to be in the fire zone is out, because it will hinder the efforts to control that fire ground. And, of course, the tourist leave zone that was issued a bit earlier today is all part of that as well, to basically ramp up that messaging and that whole, authoritative effort to get people out of harm's way.
And you're in Batemans Bay right now, which is one centre that authorities have been trying to get people out of, but it's not been easy. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, this tourist leave zone, I'm basically at the northernmost edge of that. It's all the way from Batemans Bay down to the Victorian border. And until this morning, people couldn't actually leave Batemans Bay because the Princes Highway had been closed. That reopened early this morning, and we saw thousands of cars making their way back up the Princes Highway towards Nowra and, Sydney. But then we saw renewed road closures about mid this afternoon towards Ulla Dulla. It's an active fire ground, so the fire is actually affecting access on the road. And so we've had cars turning around. They're accused of cars for some 30 or 50 kilometres in sections all the way from Batemans Bay up to Nowra. They're moving, in a time that you would usually would take, say, 10 minutes to move somewhere. That's taking 2 hours. So each kilometre is an absolute crawl. Many are turning around now back to Ulla Dulla and Batemans Bay because they can't get any further. In Ulla Dulla, we're seeing people who are self-sufficient being urged to basically park their caravans in car parks at local swimming pools and sporting ovals. And down here in Batemans Bay, people who'd been leaving the area, where we saw this sort of mass exodus, they're basically turning back around and working out what they're going to do next and staying in Batemans Bay, I guess, for the foreseeable future.
And you've been on the road a bit yourself today, Gav. What have you seen as you've moved between communities?
Well, the word unrecognisable has been used a lot during this fire crisis. And I think, look, that's a pretty apt word, to be honest, because there are whole communities that I can't even imagine what it would have looked like before the fires hit. I've been to places like Conjola Park and these small villages south of Batemans Bay, which have been worst affected. Dozens of homes have been completely reduced to ruins. And it's just really raw sort of seeing what's happened there. It's really quite surreal seeing homes standing within this sort of, they're almost like an oasis within this completely scorched earth around it for as far as you can see. It's really incomprehensible, to be honest. And a lot of residents haven't had a chance to actually look around themselves until now. They've been that busy defending other people's homes or out elsewhere helping in the community. They are now only really actually taking this in themselves.
Gavin Coote reporting. The federal electorate of Eden Monaro stretches from the Victorian border up the coast and inland past Yass in the west and the Yurrabadalla in the east. It takes in a number of towns within the evacuation zone, including many already affected by fire, such as Cobargo. I spoke to the Labor member for Eden Monaro, Mike Kelly, this afternoon about the extraordinary challenge facing him and his constituents.
I'm in Queanbeyan at the moment. We're suffering pretty badly too from this intense smoke situation, which is 25 times safe limits at the moment. So it's this is a region-wide crisis on every level we're facing right now.
And where have you been for the last few days that this has been unfolding? Have you been around the electorate at all?
Yeah, this has been a long-going problem for us, actually, going back to the Black Range fires around the Braidwood area. So I've been focusing on the information side of things at the moment, staying out of the fighters' way. We're being tested this summer more than we've ever been tested before. And right now we've got the evacuation issue from the coast, which is putting real stress on the logistics support, roads and fuel shortages. We've got communications and power issues down on the coast as well. And out west, which has largely not been covered so far in the western part of my region, on the Snowy Valleys side, we've got some really severe fire challenges over there as well. The Duns Road fire, we've lost homes. That was where we lost the young firefighter, Samuel McPaul, near Gingellic. And the loss of life right across the region now is just absolutely heartbreaking and is really biting deep. We're going to have a really big challenge from a recovery point of view, but right now we're in the middle of this. And I'm just grateful for the support that the ADF's going to be providing us with. We've got two naval vessels, HMAS Chules and MV Sycamore, coming into the coast, which are very capable vessels. We've got Army Aviation assets arriving in the region too, with Taipans, Blackhawks and Chinooks coming. So that's just so welcome from the ADF. I thank them very much for that service. And our fireys, we just cannot emphasise enough how tough they are doing it beyond anything we've ever seen before. One fiery was telling me that the previous record his brigade had was, in terms of team rotations, has been a four-week period. They're now into 6 weeks and they're just absolutely buggered.
Yeah, and you mentioned the ADF there, and obviously the RFS is an overextended agency, to say the least, right now. What is the shortfall in terms of support right now? What more does the area need?
Effectively now, the concentration has been on saving lives, and unfortunately we've had way too much loss of life already. But in the future, we need to look at a much greater capability. You know, I spent a lot of time with our RFS units going to their presentation nights, and it's an ageing crew, and they just don't have the numbers and capability for what we're going to be facing with the projections. So it's important to understand that. You know, the fire season is now 19% longer than it was in the 70s, even the 1970s, and that's increasing every year. So there are huge asset capability issues and personnel problems that we've got to face up to. And, we've got to start throwing ideas out there. But as soon as this crisis is resolved, we need to sit down all across this Commonwealth in a bipartisan, multipartisan way and develop a strategic national plan for dealing with extreme disasters.
Yeah, and just this Saturday, as we know, there are some terrible conditions forecast. And in anticipation of that, there's a pretty extensive evacuation zone that stretches from north of Batemans Bay all the way down to the Victoria border. Are people responding to that advice from what you can see and from what you've heard?
They're certainly trying to, and we're all trying to get the information out as widely as possible through whatever means we have. But communications and power have been a really big impediment to that. I'm full of admiration for the courage of people who do choose to fight where they can. But look, I think it's a decision now in the types of extreme fire conditions that we face where that is just not a viable option. And I don't think people are aware of some of the dynamics that can occur in the tragic death of the young firefighter, Samuel McPaul, that many tornado situation generated by the conditions. People just would never imagine that a truck of that size and weight could be just tossed around in that situation. And the tragic loss of Robert and Patrick Salway, we need to understand that the dynamics of these fires are just something that are beyond people's imagination. So life is so much more important, obviously, than property.
The Labor member for Eden Monaro, Mike Kelly there. In eastern Victoria, authorities are still trying to reach some communities that have been isolated for 3 days now. And with the fire expected to intensify when conditions deteriorate on Saturday, they're pleading with people in the region's alpine areas to get out today. David Sparks is in Bairnsdale in East Gippsland. David, what have you seen there today?
Well, this morning, Ange, the smoke was extremely thick, much thicker than yesterday, and that was partly because the wind changed direction, but also some of the fire activity did pick up in some locations not too far to the northeast of Bairnsdale, and that smoke was really thick most of the day. I did take a drive down to Lake's Entrance, which is a really popular tourist destination, usually absolutely heaving with tourists. Today, very, very dead. So pretty sad there. But probably what's left the strongest impression on me today, Ange, is I came back and I'm now outside the Lucknow Memorial Hall on the outskirts of Bairnsdale, where basically community members have launched their own donations system and it's just really mobilised the community. People have brought in so many clothes and food. There is just stacks and stacks of bottled water donated by businesses. And what I've really been witnessing is, apart from bringing in all that material, is a human logistical mission almost on a military scale. All these volunteers sorting it, figuring out which towns it needs to go to, getting it on vehicles. It goes on those vehicles to the roadblocks because it can't go through the roadblocks. Another vehicle that has access there meets it, takes it to the towns where it's needed. It's a pretty incredible thing to watch. I did speak to some of the volunteers here about why they decided to step in and help out.
Just so that I feel like I'm doing something. I've got family up in Buchan, and my mum was evacuated from up there. I've got two brothers who were up in the fires up there, and I just want to help out.
Tell me about community spirit and how people in East Gippsland come together when they need to.
I can give you a perfect example of community spirit. Kay and I have just been to the Coles supermarket, and we were followed around by a couple who have a residence in Painesville, a holiday house there, and we had bought in excess of $800 worth of stuff, which we had vouchers to use for here, and this couple said, we're not using the vouchers, we're going to pay for it.
Wow.
And they paid over $800 out of their own money for stuff for this relief area.
David, what's the latest on how these fires are developing?
Well, although conditions today are being described as better than what they were on Monday, or indeed what they're expected to become on Saturday, this is still a day with a lot of what they call calling fire activity. In the whole sort of eastern third of the state, that's East Gippsland and the northeast up around the Murray, too many locations to try and go through, but many, many communities are still affected. There are more than 50 fires burning in the state, almost all of them, as I say, in East Gippsland and in the state's northeast, and also in the alpine areas. Now, the alpine areas are becoming a growing concern. There have been lightning strikes in the last 24 hours in those areas. At least 11 new fires have started up in that sort of northern area, but authorities say they actually don't know how many have started because it's too difficult to figure out at this stage. Fire crews are flat out around these regions trying to build containment lines ahead of, you know, those extremely bad conditions that are expected on Saturday. The fear is that some of those new fires will grow in the alpine regions and communities there could become stranded like communities are already stranded in parts of East Gippsland. Deputy Emergency Management Commissioner for Victoria, Deborah Abbott, issued this warning a little earlier.
We have in the East Gippsland area, as I said, a number of isolated communities. In the alpine area, where we've got tourists and visitors and people residing. We don't want those people to become isolated like some of the communities that we have down in East Gippsland. So again, I ask, please, leave now while we have this opportunity, the window that we have, and move to areas where it is much safer.
That's Deputy Emergency Management Commissioner Deborah Abbott. And what about the people who are unaccounted for?
Well, this is an area of great uncertainty. We know, of course, that one person is confirmed dead, but there are 17 other people unaccounted for. The authorities are not giving away any details about which communities those people are missing from. They don't want to fuel speculation. But what they have said is that with it being so difficult to just get around at the moment, they can't get in and figure out what's going on with these people. But there are grave concerns, obviously, about them.
And we heard so much about the thousands of people who were trapped down by the water at Mallacoota. How are the efforts to get those people out going?
Now, there will be a few meetings in Mallacoota this afternoon, community meetings, to try and determine which people will be given priority, effectively, to be evacuated. Huge military helicopters have left, I think it's Sale in East Gippsland today, to head to that region. Not so much for evacuations, but to help get fireys and police in and out for shift changeovers. We know that there are naval vessels, of course, on the way. Some 800 people may be able to put on the largest Navy vessel, but that still leaves more than 3,000-odd people. So still a huge, again, I use the word logistical exercise that the Australian Defence Force and other authorities are going through there.
David Sparks reporting there from East Gippsland in Victoria. As you heard, after the devastation unleashed by bushfires on the New South Wales south coast and in southeastern Victoria, authorities have called on people who don't need to be in the region to leave now, ahead of the weekend conditions. Hordes of people have responded, leading to massive traffic jams on the Princes Highway and other key arteries in and out of fire-affected areas. People queued for petrol, food and water, and at times all three were in short supply. The lines of cars leaving fire-damaged areas have slowed to a crawl at times, as Sarah Dingle reports.
In southern New South Wales and in eastern Victoria, a mass exodus is underway. At a number of service stations on the New South Wales south coast, cars lined up the road to enter, but fuel was in short supply. People stood in massive queues to buy food outside supermarkets in places like Batemans Bay and Maruya, where Woolworths staff kept a tight rein on numbers going in and out to maintain crowd control. Many were trying to stock up in order to be able to leave.
We're camping at Browlea, but we just thought we'd better get a bit of fuel while we can, clean the place up and get going maybe tomorrow, you know.
The advice was that we should leave the coast if we could, and we've been told it's safe through Brown Mountain, so we're going that way. But yeah, we were on the beach, Browlea Beach, on New Year's Eve, where the beachfront caught fire.
In the hard-hit Victorian town of Mallacoota, Anglican Minister Chris Mulheron said power had been out for days. Local shops have run out of bread, but other foods were still available.
There are, I would guess, 50 or 100 people who have lost their homes completely, and obviously that's tragic for them, and they are resigned to getting about with their cars, or, you know, there was a lady in the op shop this morning saying she had nothing and getting some clothes to get through the day. So for those people, it's tragic and very sad. We're safe in the town, so that's, you know, we know we're safe, but smoke visibility means we can see about 200 metres at the moment, so no aircraft are getting in, I don't think.
In the New South Wales coastal town of Narooma, a public meeting was held today with a speaker set up on an outdoor stage. RFS spokesman Marty pleaded with visitors to leave the area.
With the forecast for Saturday, we want to be able to have the capacity here to support people who absolutely need to be here. Okay, we don't want people hanging around thinking they might continue their holiday after Saturday. Okay, we simply may not have the capacity to support that. Those of you that have been here have already seen what it's like. We start to run out of basic supplies. I can't stress strongly enough that we're in very dire circumstances. And I don't want to see anyone, I've heard of this happening elsewhere, and it's probably not to the people who are gathering here today, but a bit of a hero thing of wanting to sit this out and see it through. That's a really dangerous strategy, and it puts a lot of other people at risk if you're taking up capacity here that doesn't need to be.
It wasn't just returning holidaymakers on the road. Also in the traffic was former Press Gallery journalist, now Cobargo local, Peter Logue, whose hometown was devastated by fire on Tuesday. Peter Logue evacuated along with the rest of his family and was driving to Canberra when he spoke to PM. He'd spent hours on the road, but with roads jammed and traffic slowed to a crawl, he'd yet to reach Cooma.
Well, we're in a P-Super. Visibility varies between 200 metres and about 50 metres. There are lots of big rigs, people with boats, motorhomes.
And what about the landscape? Have you been driving through some of the burned out areas, or is it fine where
yes,
you are?
All the way from Cobargo to the Bega turnoff was devastated. I saw many, many homes destroyed. Just personally, I have 10 friends in the area that I've done work with as a volunteer who have lost their homes. They are long-term residents of the area. I gave a lift to an older guy called Malcolm Elmsley, who lost his home and is now considering his future and where he's going to live. And a lot of people are doing that because what's happened now is that the livelihoods of people who work there have basically been destroyed, and it will take an awful long time to put it back together again.
And may I ask you, Peter, how your week has been so far?
Well, it's been the longest day. I've probably had about 5 hours sleep in 2 days. We were evacuated from our own place. All my kids were down camping at Mystery Bay, and they spotted the trouble. They turned up at our house at 4 o'clock in the morning. At 4:30, the local dairy farmer, we live in the middle of two dairy farms, Brad Tyrrell, called us up, and he said, I won't say his exact words, but he said, "Mate, get out now." So we packed everybody in the cars. There were 3 carloads of kids and a musician friend of mine from Canberra, and we got out of there fast. We went to Bermagui to look after my wife's parents, elderly parents, and my kids followed my Canberra friend who knows the backcountry, and he got them up through Wyndham, up the back way, and got them to Canberra, and that was an enormous relief for us. When we left, we turned on our sprinkler system. We have quite a sophisticated firefighting system. Our problem was that the fire came from an area where it had never come from before, and none of the experts had seen it. That fire then swept through Cobargo all the way in, and when you drive in from our place, which is about 6 kilometres away, the whole landscape is black. And many houses are gone, and I've spotted dead animals in the middle of the road. It's sort of a wasteland.
Have you had any news of your own home? Is it still standing?
We'll just see how it goes. We evacuated a few things, all my musical instruments, all my collection of Clonakilla killer wines, and some paintings. But we don't know how things are going to survive or not. But, you know, you can have the nicest home in the world, but if you're not around to live in it, what's the point?
That's Cobargo homeowner Peter Logue ending Sarah Dingle's report. You're listening to PM on radio, on the ABC Listen app and via podcast. I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison has spoken today after touring the fire-ravaged South Coast for the first time since the New Year's Eve devastation. He's pledging more support from the military, including evacuations and relief. He's also faced questions about the government's longer-term response to the issue of climate change. Tommy Goulden reports.
The Bega Valley on the New South Wales far south coast saw some of the worst of the bushfires on New Year's Eve and the chaos that's since ensued. Scott Morrison's there this evening along with wife Jenny, touring the fire ground and taking briefings from local operations chiefs.
And so the risks on building into Saturday for you on what you're trying to do to prepare for Saturday?
The weather prediction for Saturday is a very nasty day.
Yeah.
His day began on an even more sombre note, attending the funeral of Jeff Keaton, the Rural Fire Service volunteer killed a week before Christmas in fires near Picton.
It was important to be able to honour his great sacrifice and his tremendous service. Sadly, we'll be attending 2 more of these services in the not too distant future.
And as for the tens of thousands of holidaymakers swept up in today's exodus from the disaster zone, he had this advice.
To be patient, to have confidence in the state agencies that are leading the operational response on the ground.
And the federal government's already, he says, paid out some $21 million to New South Wales victims of this season's fires, with Victorian victims soon to get payments too. The Prime Minister says the military is being prepared to do more to help too, especially in New South Wales.
At this stage, it's still in a planning phase. We have a number of naval assets here in New South Wales just are being assessed for how they can be tasked.
In Victoria, the Navy's already been helping to evacuate Mallacoota on the northeast coast of the state. More help may come there too.
We're also been tasking Spartans and C-130s to assist with any evacuation effort in Victoria, but the weather conditions there are making that very difficult.
And he says the government's dealing with the emergency as best as it can.
We cannot control the natural disaster, but what we can do is control our response.
But the Coalition's longer-term bushfire preparations are being questioned, especially on the issue of climate change.
This is a national emergency, and the tragedy of this is it's precisely the sort of predictions that were made by scientists.
That's opposition leader Anthony Albanese speaking on ABC News Channel.
The government has to actually not say that nothing needs to change. The truth is that they're right when they say Australia acting alone isn't enough. But the problem is not only are we not acting, we're actually preventing global action.
But Scott Morrison insists he's not hiding from the issue.
I've always acknowledged the link, as has the minister, between the broader issues of global climate change and what that means for the world's weather and the dryness of conditions in many places. But I'm sure you would also agree that no response by any one government anywhere in the world can be linked to any one fire event.
What can you tell Australians about what your government is doing to mitigate or to plan for the long-term economic and environmental impacts of climate change over the generation as our children
meet and beat our international commitments to reduce our emissions? Because that's what a responsible country does.
The Prime Minister Scott Morrison ending Tom Eagledon's report. And stepping away from the fires for now, there has been a development in the long-running story about the police investigation into the Energy Minister, Angus Taylor. Tom Eagledon joins me again. Tom, New South Wales Police have wrapped up their investigation into Mr. Taylor. What's the latest?
Well, they've referred their investigations now onto federal police, based, of course, here in Canberra, Ange. Now, it's undergoing its normal assessments to decide whether or not to continue with the investigation. That is something that does normally take place, as I said. Now, the New South Wales Police Financial Crime Squad took carriage of this initially some weeks ago now, initially expecting this investigation to take around a week. It has taken several weeks longer than that. During that investigation, it spoke to City of Sydney officers, among other people. Now, for a bit of background here, Ange, this, of course, revolves around Angus Taylor's claims some months ago now that Lord Mayor Clover Moore there in the City of Sydney and the rest of council spent some $14 million on travel and used that as an attack over their commitment to lowering their carbon emissions. By doing that, he also gave the Daily Telegraph there in Sydney a document supporting that claim that appeared to come from the City of Sydney. Now, it turns out those claims were not true and that document was false. He has consistently, though, denied any wrongdoing, specifically that his office tampered with that document. The opposition, though, with this latest development, wants to know a little more, though it is being fairly careful about how it's prosecuting this. This was the opposition leader, Anthony Albanese, speaking on ABC News Channel earlier today.
At a time when thousands of people are being evacuated from their homes, I don't think it's a time to get into a heavy political critique. But suffice to say, I think you look at what was said and compare it with what clearly the facts are around this document and its creation and its being given to the media, that the two things don't add up. And I hope that the Prime Minister answers the question as to when he knew that it had been referred to the Australian Federal Police.
The opposition leader, Anthony Albanese. And Tom, has Angus Taylor himself said anything about this latest development?
Well, we here at the ABC, of course, approached his office for some comment about this. And via a spokesman, he's come back and said the following, that the police, the New South Wales Police, that is, have confirmed to his solicitors that they've concluded their investigations, and he welcomes that fact, and says that this supports his repeated previous statements that neither he or any member of his office altered the document in question. He adds that, of course, he'll cooperate with the federal police investigation and any inquiries they wish to make of him, although he adds he fully expects they will conclude that this matter, Ange, is baseless.
Political reporter Tom Eagledon there. That's PM for this Thursday. You can now hear us live on your free-to-air TV. ABC Local Radio is on Channel 25. We're also on the ABC Listen app, so you can listen wherever you happen to be or subscribe and podcast us later. To find the webpage, search ABC PM in your browser to access all our audio to share. I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.